Hi there, I'm Andrew Pardo. I'm a program manager on the .NET Runtime. You just heard Jay talking about what we're doing in .NET at a broader scope. I'm going to talk a little bit further down in the stack. This is what we think of as .NET. This is an extremely simplified view. You've got the runtime, the ecosystem, on top of this, the libraries, and then the tools. And all of these things together are really what we think of as the full .NET package. I focus on the far left side of this. I own the runtime, everything inside of the runtime, the garbage collector, the exception handling, threading, you know, all of the code execution things. Work very closely with the ecosystem team. The libraries are the biggest part of that. And so if I'm going to be getting a lot of questions from you, these are the questions that I'm best prepared to answer, although I'm happy to attack anything. As I said, I'm welcoming questions. If you have questions, one of the best resources for questions is to look at the .NET blog. We try to post anything that, any topic that you are interested in hearing about. We would love to supply you a little bit more content on the .NET blog. I have some questions already from the last one. There's a question from JD saying that he's going to be moving to Korea, and he's heard that Java is far more dominant than C Sharp in Korea. And is Microsoft pushing to change this? Absolutely. We love competition, right? There's a lot of good ideas that are in Java. It's a fantastic language. C Sharp is a better programming language. We like competing. .NET is very strong in America. .NET is very strong in many parts of Asia. One of our big customers is actually Fujitsu in Japan. So we are pushing to change this. But enjoy your time in Korea, and good luck with Java. Another question that we have here from Robert, whether Microsoft has any plans for a .NET game engine. There are a number of .NET game engines out already. I can think of, for example, Unity has a fantastic game engine that exposes C-sharp. That is exposed in C-sharp. There is the XNA games. The thing just changed. So we work with partner teams to support game engines, and we will continue to do so. Another question from Prasad, that we don't seem to see many developments in system security. Prasad, I'm going to point you to the .NET blog. Leave a comment there, and we tell us what you are interested in seeing coming into system security, and we will definitely take that suggestion to heart and see what we can do. So I'm going to skip back to the slides for a couple of minutes and then get right back to your questions. Here's something that you heard from Jay, that every company these days is a software company. No matter what your business is, software is a critical part of your business. Enterprise software needs to be more innovative, more agile. You can't use that big navy green application, the WinForms application, that just looks like it came from the late 90s. Everybody wants to be using their mobile devices. You know, line of business apps have to be cross-device. People bring their own devices to work. Open source is extremely important these days. Some of the best projects that we have out there are projects that have been developed in the open so that the community can really develop and contribute. And this allows us to make the changes that we need to make in advance of really baking in the decisions that you can't change later. It's said that changing a line of code on day one costs you nothing, and changing it at after you've shipped is incredibly expensive. So open source is very important to us now. And then, of course, enterprises have existing applications that they must evolve and keep running. And so I'll talk a bit about how we're investing in that. So our investments in .NET, I think of them along three axes. One is openness. Jay talked about the .NET Foundation having been announced at Build, and how we are working with Xamarin. We're working, you know, to enable cross-device. We have a couple of rather large projects like ASP.NET vNext that was talked a lot about at TechEd, where we're doing most of the development for this in the open. We have been trying as much as possible to listen to the community and have the community really participate in a conversation. And, you know, openness for us isn't about open source code only. Openness for us is really about having an open conversation with you, understanding what's important to you. Productivity. One of the best things about .NET is really that your skills are transferable to many scenarios. Maybe not Java and Korea, although a lot of the similarities in the language will help you there. But you know, .NET, you can use it from small devices to huge servers. You know, Jay had this slide showing that we've got billions of installs, and there's many places where your .NET knowledge is usable. And then lastly, and this is kind of the core of what we're doing on my team, is .NET needs to continue to be relevant. And in order to be relevant, we need to continue making big bets into .NET. And I'll talk about a few of those today. A couple more questions. YHT, what is the direction for F#? F# is still a critical language for us. The next talk up is actually the future of C#. Mads Torgensen and someone else from the Managed Languages team. The team that owns C# owns the Managed Languages, C#, VB, F#, and he may be able to touch on that a little bit. From Hisham Binayateya, what is the future of Silverlight? Silverlight is supported. You can go online. I don't have the link with me now, but you can go online and see the Silverlight support contract. We know that enterprises make use of Silverlight, and I am not the person who can talk about any product plans for Silverlight. Christoph, will NuGet packages like immutable collections or multi-dictionary make it into the BCL sometime, or will they stay separate on NuGet? So I'm going to actually defer that question until I get a little further in the talk. Because I have some relevant comments to Christoph's question. So here's an overview of the question. The one thing I have not listed in here are of the session. One thing I've not listed in here are the questions, so do keep them coming. I love being interrupt driven. First, we're going to talk about our investments in the desktop. .NET Framework 4.5.1 was released just late last year. .NET Framework 4.5.2 came out, I think, in May of this year. We're really trying to deliver .NET at a faster cadence so that you can continue to add value to your business applications. I'll talk a little bit about ASP.NET V next. Not so much about ASP.NET V next itself, but about the cloud-optimized.NET that is under it and how we made that possible through portable class libraries and universal apps. I'll talk about .NET Native, which is one of the main projects I've been working on lately. .NET Native is our effort to get many of the qualities of C++ native development, the deployment characteristics, the performance characteristics, and bring them to C# developers without losing the productivity that you get from .NET. And it is currently C#, but there's nothing about .NET Native that ties it to C# itself. And lastly, we're going to talk about the Ryujit modern JIT compiler, which is another deep investment that we're making in this space. So first, .NET 4.5.2. It is available for download. It's been out there for a while on the Download Center. It is a highly compatible in-place update of .NET 4 and .NET 4.5, so it replaces the .NET 4 and 4.5 on your box when you install. Our focus with .NET 4.5.2 was to incorporate feedback from the 4.5.1 release, which I mentioned came out in late 2013. We have 7 major features in .NET 4.5.2. and 109 bug fixes. So the major features, they break into about 6 pieces. There's ASP.NET improvements. You can queue background work items and not be interrupted by IIS. This was something where previously, if you queued a background work item and then IIS swapped out your ASP.NET application, then your background work item made no progress. We're now working with IIS to make sure that the host does not swap out your background work item. We've got some things that make inspecting and modifying response headers more reliable, such that you are minimizing deadlocks. Making sure that your response status code can be read. This is useful for shared hosting. We also have, this is one that was very exciting at a couple of conferences where we talked about high DPI rendering improvements in Windows Forms. Windows Forms, they are a great technology. Lots of companies still use them. Windows Forms were invented when monitors were 480 by 350 resolution, and now we've got 4K. Maybe not quite that bad. But the point is that Windows Forms controls, it used to be that if you took a Windows Form app from a low resolution monitor and you moved it to a big resolution monitor, that the glyphs, the tiling in Windows Form, you'd have a glyph that is this big and continues to register as this big, whereas it should be blown up to be to scale to the larger monitor, to the larger resolution. We went through all of the glyphs in Windows form, found the ones that were not rendering properly on high resolution monitors, and fixed those. Some improvements in distributed transactions, and then a couple of things that go into our profiling space. Some more robust profiling APIs for dependency injection, which is very useful for many of you. ETW is now enabled on a larger .NET surface area. This is event tracing for Windows. It's an incredibly lightweight tracing performance monitoring infrastructure that is inside of Windows. And it is exposed through .NET. And we are expanding the amount of .NET that you can monitor with ETW. And activity tracing is, if you're a fan of activity tracing, it's this technology that allows you to do performance monitoring on an action rather than on a specific machine. We've made many improvements on this. So now to the ecosystem. For the ecosystem, there's three things that we're really focusing on here, three themes, three principles that we're going for. One is openness, another is consistency, and then the last is, of course, feedback. We want to share early, we want to share often. A lot of our work on NuGet is making certain that we can get these packages out there. There was a package, I don't remember precisely which one, but there was a package that we released three betas of on NuGet. We released it in the unsupported form on NuGet and took feedback three times before we put it into the supported feed. And this is the kind of thing, as I said, where our ability to make the changes before we really baked it into the supported product was extremely helpful. And your feedback really shaped that class library. The consistency such that your .NET skills can be used wherever you go, and feedback driven. Now this gets to the question that the question's off the screen right now, but whether a particular library was going to make its way from NuGet back into the core BCL. We're changing the way that we're thinking about the core BCL. We're changing the way we're thinking about the entire framework. With NuGet, putting a library on NuGet in the supported feed means that you can rely on it just as if it were shipped with the big .NET. And the big .NET is great. We have no problem with people using the big .NET. But what we're looking at right now is how we can make more agile packages, more agile distributions of .NET that are smaller. You get to pick what you want to use yourself. You have more of a pay for play. And so I would say that the support that you are seeing for this library in NuGet is no different from the support that you would get in the large .NET install. So you should use the NuGet one happily. ASP.NET vNext, this is something that we talked a ton about at the Tech Ed conference that just happened in May, I believe. This is a new modern modular web stack. The idea is that you can develop and deploy ASP.NET sites quickly. If you want to know more about ASP.NET, come on back tomorrow. The important part for me is that it ships the .NET framework as a part of your app, as opposed to shipping the big .NET framework down. You know, if you've got an ASP.NET machine, you have to have ASP.NET installed. ASP.NET requires the full .NET framework. You're likely running on top of IIS. You're provisioning the entire machine. In this case, you're taking your ASP.NET app, your vNext app, you're pulling down the .NET framework with it. The user is shipping its, so the questions just disappeared, by the way. If you can get that screen back up, I'd appreciate. When you are shipping the libraries as part of your app, then you get to choose when you version a library, as opposed to a new .NET framework comes down on your machine and then suddenly you have all of the libraries have been updated. We do make our releases highly compatible, but you know there are times when people will rely on particular behaviors of a version, and now the behavior has changed when the library version has changed. If you are shipping your libraries with your app, you no longer need to worry about that. But of course, we still need to service, and so we will service critical security issues. This is enabled by shipping a cloud-optimized framework, which is refactored and relies heavily on the fact that you can get libraries through NuGet. And the driver below this is CoreCLR. The CoreCLR being, of course, the small CLR that shipped with Silverlight applications, as opposed to the full .NET CLR that is installed with 4.5.1, 4.5.2. So, in making your .NET knowledge more valuable, making sure that you can use your skills wherever you go, We are really actively moving our library code onto NuGet. We have a curated feed on NuGet, which you should think of the curated feed as being the big .NET package. The curated feed, the curated feed actually has two pieces of it. We've got the pre-release and then we've got the stable. And so the stable are the things that are, you know, these are stable, we will support them, the support agreements are up there on NuGet. The pre-release things are things that we're trying out. We're looking to get the feedback from you, and we're looking to understand, does this library work for you as is? Do you have any ideas for how to change this library? This is not completely baked, so before it makes to the stable release, we want to make sure that we get it right. So as I said, we're shipping our APIs. We're moving to ship them on NuGet. And another nice thing with NuGet is it allows us to ship across platforms. And this is not just Windows platforms. Of course, you know, a NuGet library will work on Windows Phone and on Windows and you name it. But we're also looking for our packages to work across Xamarin and other devices. I mentioned that we have a curated feed. The reason that we have a curated feed for this is that NuGet is big. There's a ton of packages on NuGet. .NET's only been participating for a short time. And we quickly realized that there were problems with how you can discover packages. So now you can look into our NuGet feed, discover packages that the .NET team has put into its NuGet feed. And there is, of course, the question of support. And this is where we get to the stable section of the curated feed. One thing that's very interesting about the curated feed is you'll notice that not every library in the curated feed has been written by Microsoft. There's a couple of them. jQuery is one, and the Newtonsoft JSON Serializer, I had to remember that one, is the other one, that are currently in our stable supported NuGet curated feed. Even though Microsoft has not written these packages, we will support them as if they were part of the .NET framework, part of the big box install, the base class library. So one other problem that we've had with our APIs on NuGet is that not every core API is portable across platforms. There's a lot of discussion out there about how the file APIs are not supported in the Windows Store, for example. We are taking feedback. We are making changes to that. We are making sure that these core APIs, the ones that you need, will be brought back into the profiles. So as far as improving your options for sharing code, the portable class libraries have been improved for stable cross-device sharing. And we announced something at Build called Universal Projects. If you think about portable class libraries, the idea of a portable class library is if you have a set of code that you want to use across many applications, the PCL lets you build this once and then use it in different devices. Different scenarios. Universal Projects kind of approach that from the other angle, that if you have an application that you want to work across many different devices, then the Universal Project gives you the option to create that project once and use it in many places. And then lastly, finishing up this slide, we are feedback driven, we're shipping much more often. We're making most of our changes these days based on user voice, so get on there and vote, and bug reports. And using this feedback and the lightweight public previews through the pre-release feed in our NuGet feed allows us to collect feedback before we release. So here is a suggestion that we had on NuGet. I think this was last October, that we should remove the platform restriction on Microsoft NuGet packages. Now many of our folks here are very smart. We don't catch everything. We didn't realize that. Even though we were making sure that our APIs would work across the Xamarin platform so that you could use them on iOS and Android as well as all the Windows platforms, we did not realize that all of the licensing restrictions said that you could only deploy these libraries on Windows. And so people were building applications using our libraries on iOS and Android, but could not legally distribute these applications because of the license restriction. We have fixed that. We've not only fixed that, we talked with Xamarin. We wanted to make certain that they could fully support portable class libraries. They now fully support PCLs in their tool sets. And we want to make sure that we have a consistent implementation across devices. And given that we don't own the Xamarin implementation, the way that we're ensuring that is by sharing our base class library test suite with Xamarin. We're also sharing it with Unity, the game engine, so that they can verify that their implementations of the libraries, that their implementations of the runtime run our portable class libraries properly. Another piece of feedback that we got from User Voice that we would like to have the ability to create portable class libraries in VS Express editions. I love Express. I was one of the folks who was arguing for Express when we came out with the concept. I'm too old to remember when, but it was definitely in the early 2000s. We took that feedback to heart. We got the portable class libraries so that you can create them in Express editions. So the thing to hear from this part of the conversation is talk to us. We are listening to your feedback. We're making changes to your feedback. And now I'm going to try to get the attention of the folks out there and let them know that the question feed is down. And could they please bring back the question feed? I'll go on with the slides for a bit. NuGet packages, portable class libraries, as I mentioned, work cross-platform. PCLs work in VS Express and with Xamarin tools. Thank you, sorry. So universal Windows apps. The idea of universal Windows apps, it's kind of the opposite way of PCLs. I said earlier that PCLs, the idea is that you can use one library across different platforms. The idea of universal Windows apps is that you can share your source and your assets between Windows 8.1 and Windows 8.1 platforms. This is, of course, where we're starting with this. We would like to see universal apps work across more platforms than just Windows Phone and Windows 8.1. But in our push to be more open, one of the things that we're doing is releasing things that are not in their final state. This is very different from the Microsoft of, say, 5-10 years ago, where everything had to be polished and fully documented and supported in 37 different languages before we'd even let it get out of Redmond. Now we're in this position where we're like, hey, we've got something useful that works on Windows 8.1, it works on Windows Phone 8.1, let's put it out now, see how people like it, see what changes they want us to make. And the big changes in the core, which is the part that I know and love, is that you can now share resources. So you can share things like XAML UI. You can share any of your assets. And here are our questions are back. Thank you very much for fixing that. But I will finish up universal Windows apps. The idea is that you can develop one application in Visual Studio, you can develop an application that runs across many platforms in Visual Studio using only one single project. If you do play with Universal Windows apps, you'll note that there are conditional constants inside of Universal apps, for example, if Windows Phone app, if Windows app, that VS is aware of these, and VS knows when it's reading your code that this is what it should do for the syntax highlighting for the emulators, for your IntelliSense, that if you have code, if you're on code that says this is a Windows Phone app, it will bring up APIs that are part of Windows Phone. And you know, when you hit F5, the Windows Phone emulator will come up. So a question from Hisham Bin Ataya. Does Roslyn play nicely with ASP.NET? If yes, how can it increase the performance of web applications? So that's another great question for Mads in the Future of C# session, which is coming up next. So Roslyn is, for those of you who are unfamiliar, Roslyn is the C# platform, the .NET platform for managed languages of the future. It is the way I think of it is a new C# compiler, but not just a C# compiler. It's a platform for code analysis. But in the end, what Roslyn does is it compiles C# code or VB code into Microsoft Intermediate Language, MSIL, that then the .NET runtime takes that, jits it, engines it, tritons it, projectsends it into actual running machine code. So the question of how Roslyn will increase the performance of web applications, it does not directly affect performance because most of your performance gains come after the MSIL stage when you go from MSIL to machine code. But what Roslyn will do for you is it will make your tools far more productive so that you can develop your ASP.NET applications better. We're making a bunch of investments in Visual Studio based upon Roslyn, based upon the rich code analysis features of Roslyn that enable us enable you as the developer to understand your code better, to browse your code better, to discover your APIs better, better diagnostics, better error messages. These are the things that are going to help you write better applications, and thus your ASP.NET applications will be faster. This source of .NET, this is something that's actually kind of exciting. This is an application that is built on Roslyn, so this works out nicely that you asked this question right at that point. Source of .NET is a web page that allows you to browse the .NET framework source code online. It's an extremely rich browsing experience. You can look through, you can hyperlink through code, obviously. If you find an API that you're interested in, say you're reading a function and you see a use of ArrayList, and you say to yourself, okay, ArrayList, I've never heard of this before, I wonder what it does. You can click on ArrayList, you come up with the definition of ArrayList. You can look at the collections class and see what other classes are there. You can look at the class hierarchy. You can look at the entire namespace hierarchy. The browsing features include, as I say here, go to definition, finding references, highlighting references to some code that you're looking at in the browser, document outline, project explorer, namespace explorer. I encourage you to go to this website, httpsourceof.net. It's updated all the time with the current .NET framework source code. And this is using Roslyn in the background to allow this agile source browsing. So I'm about halfway through the talk now. I've talked mostly about the ecosystem work. I'm going to dive into the core of things in a couple of minutes, but I'm going to skip to some questions right now. Wouter asks whether there will be .NET native for non-store applications in the future. So .NET native is, I'll talk about that in actually just a minute. .NET native is our effort to bring the deployment and performance characteristics of native languages like C++ to .NET without losing out on the productivity, the class libraries and the type safe language and the automated memory management that makes .NET so valuable. We started with the Windows Store for a couple of good reasons. One, Windows Store is awesome. I know that Windows 8.1 has gotten a lot of bad press, but sometimes I think the press just has a thing against, Microsoft should innovate, and then we do, I love Windows 8. I use the store apps all the time, and I'm really appreciating getting the performance improvements. Fresh Paint is an app that I love playing with, and it's been out with .NET Native for a long time. Months at least, it's a long time here. And I really appreciate the performance increase that came with .NET Native. The other reason that we picked store apps is that, frankly, in Windows Store, you've got a curated set of APIs that are useful for these large format fill the screen applications. If we had brought .NET Native to the big desktop first and had to support all of WPF, all of WinForms, possibly ASP.NET. Like, there's just so much there. This is another example of the .NET team really trying to develop something viable, develop something useful, and get it out to our users right now, so that you can give it a shot, see what you like, see what you don't like. Are we going to do non-store applications? Absolutely. Will it be in the near future? It will be in the future. It will be in the near future. It's not the next thing around the corner. I think that the phone applications are probably the next place we're going to go with .NET Native. That's again another scoped API set, scope functionality. But I can tell you that we make these core investments. We don't make them such that they are tied to any individual scenario. We're making core platform investments so that we can bring them to many scenarios in the future. David Drotty, compile time seemed to slow down when MS Build moved out of .NET version path into the VS path. Is that a known issue? I would say that it was not a known issue to me. I'm not an MS Build person. You are welcome to either send me a mail, my email address was up on the screen earlier, or you can stick a comment on the .NET blog. We will get it routed to the right people. A question from Maciek, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, is Microsoft supporting Mono on Linux in any form? So Mono is an alternate implementation of the .NET framework on Linux. It comes from the Xamarin company, who's the same folks who do the iOS and Android targeting that we're working so closely with. The form in which we are supporting Mono is, as Jay mentioned, we are very close partners with Xamarin. We love Miguel. Miguel loves us. We share our tests with him so that he can verify his implementations. We do what we can do to help him be successful. And by helping him be successful, we're helping our developers be successful. Is there a future of IE, from George, is there a future of IE embedded apps like XBAP? I personally can't speak to that. I'm sorry. There is a very active IE blog. I suggest that you throw a question on there. And then Vincent, correct me if I'm thinking in a completely irrelevant area. Is .NET Native only coming to WinRT? Or are there plans for other areas of .NET such as WPF? Is it even possible for that matter? So Vincent, thank you for recognizing that that attacking the larger surface area of .NET is difficult. Yes, .NET Native, it is definitely possible. I'm going to slip into my slides for a couple of minutes before I address the .NET Native question. I will skip to the NuGet question that's up on the screen right now as I'm finishing up my ecosystem portion of my talk. Alex is asking whether we can discuss the distribution of NuGet packages. We love the ease of installing packages on dev machines, but distributing them to users is not easy, unlike the big .NET. Alex, point noted. I know that my coworkers in the ecosystem team are watching this talk now. They're probably wishing that I had the right answer, and unfortunately I don't. But give us a comment on the .NET blog. Someone will definitely get back to you. Will there be a portable view component for universal libraries that will help us to dev one view for all form factors like Xamarin is trying to do? Another great suggestion, Jens. Comment on the blog, send me mail, either one. We'll make sure someone gets to that. All right, so I've talked a bit about how we are continuing our investment in the full .NET framework. We have this rapid release cadence now. We're trying to make sure we get these improvements out to you quickly and respond to the feedback that you have given us. I've talked a bit about our cloud-optimized .NET, the ASP.NET vNext, because we don't use code names here, and our portable class libraries and our universal apps. Now I'm going to continue on to talk about .NET Native and our new JIT compiler. These are both code generation strategies. So just a bit of a primer on code generation. So what comes out of the C# compiler is Microsoft Intermediate Language. So step one here is you start with your source code, C#, VB, F#, Fortran, .NET. There are many, many .NET languages out there. They go through your compiler, and you come out with MSIL bytecode. MSIL bytecode is when you start getting into my world. MSIL bytecode is a standard stack-based intermediate language that is the representation of all .NET programs before we turn them into something that an actual machine, Intel, ARM, AMD device can run. In order to turn a program from MSIL into machine code, you use a code generator. And code generation, there are two strategies for code generation that have predominated. One is lazy code generation. You do this at runtime with a just-in-time compiler or a JIT compiler, if you ever hear about JITting or JIT compiling. And .NET, historically, lazy has been the way to go. Why do work when you don't have to? With .NET, we always liked the idea that if you had, say, 100 methods in your application and a particular run of that application only ran 50 methods, why spend the time generating code for the 50 that you're not running? We did the same thing with loading libraries. You know, when you need a library, then we'll load it. By deferring work, you don't have to do the work. If you don't do the work, your performance increases. The other way to do it is to do your code generation is optimistically. You do it at build time or install time. And we've had a number of strategies for optimistic code generation. Stretching way back over a decade is NGen, the native image generator, wherein when you install your application, you run NGen, it creates native binaries for your app. With Windows Phone 8, we had something called Triton, which was a pretty interesting technology. we called it the compiler in the cloud. It was basically taking NGen and moving half of it into the cloud, moving half of it to the Windows Phone Store, and then the other half of it to the user's device. So if you think about code generation, there are two parts to it. There's the hard optimization. How do you register? How do you allocate your registers? How do you register your allocators? How do you allocate your registers? How do you do all the code flow, data flow optimizations, all the real thinking that a compiler does? And then the other part is, how do you tie it to the framework that is installed on the user's machine? In what DLL should we find system.console.writeline? For every user's phone, there's a different install of the .NET framework. You need to know where to find APIs, what the shape of .NET structures is on this particular user's device. So with Triton, we moved the hard compilation step, all the thinking steps, all the compiler optimizations into the cloud, and then we did the binding step where we take the application and we make it work on the user's device. We did that on the phone, and that's way, way cheaper than the hard compilation, and that enables us to give you NGen applications on the phone without actually creating NGen applications on the phone. And .NET Native builds upon that. So with .NET code execution today, you can see why I'm not an artist, we're kind of straddling the two edges with one big .NET. Like if you look at the .NET framework 4.5.2, you've got a JIT compiler that installs with that and is used in most of your app runs, and then you've got NGen, so that when we install the framework, we do the optimistic code generation for framework assemblies, and a lot of applications NGen their assemblies. So we're really taking this one engine and this one code generator, and we're trying to hit both edges. With .NET Native, we're looking at whether we can get the C++ performance, self-contained apps, easy deployment, and not compromise on the dynamic experience. You're able to use Reflection. You've got the unlimited class libraries. Not exactly true. Nothing is infinite. But there's a class library for everything that you want to do. So with .NET Native, we're really trying to hit far on the optimistic code generation end, and how do we make that early code generation as good as possible? But we're not just straddling one side of the fence here. With RyuJIT, which is our new JIT compiler, we're creating a world-class modern JIT compiler that enables our dynamic optimizations to be as good as they can be. Instead of focusing on the middle and trying to stretch to both sides, we're trying to hit both sides of the equation and then see how we can improve the middle. I'll go back to a couple of questions here. How will Roslyn influence Mono? Well, one of the most exciting announcements at Build was actually that Roslyn, at least to me, is that Roslyn was open sourced. So given that Roslyn is open source, it is completely possible for Mono to pick up Roslyn, or frankly, given that Mono is also a highly shared project, open source project, it's possible for you, Roger, to pick up Roslyn and influence Mono. Morale, what is the future of App Fabric? I'm not qualified to answer that question. Guy, when will .NET C# become more present on more platforms such as Intel Galileo in the IoT space, more specifically on gateway devices? The IoT space and the Intel Galileo, very exciting space right now. For those of you who don't know the Intel Galileo, Intel came out with a system on chip. It's basically an entire computer sitting on a processor die. I'm making the size of a processor die. But it's an entire computer on a processor die. It is an Intel x86 platform. They had, I think they're calling the platform the Quark. And they came out with a board called the Galileo board, which is an Arduino Shield compatible board. The Galileo, it's about yay big. It's this beautiful little board for embedded development. It takes the Arduino Shield so you can use Arduino peripherals on it. But it's a full x86 computer, and you know, it boots Windows and et cetera, et cetera. So Guy, I can tell you that the IoT team is working closely with the .NET team. The IoT team, of course, has the .NET micro framework, which is a version of .NET that is optimized for microcontrollers and these very small devices. But we also work closely with the IoT team to make sure that the .NET framework will work on devices like the Intel Galileo. There's a lot of exciting announcements coming out from the IoT team this year. Stay tuned for that. Planet Call, distributing versions of binaries will cause compatibility issues similar as DLL hell. Never heard of that. No, seriously. Distributing versions of binaries. So the idea here is that with NuGet, where the application is deciding which versions of binaries that it is relying upon, then you get to choose the versions. We will not change the behavior of your application by updating the library behind you. Now, the question of DLL hell was a servicing question, and servicing is something that you have to think about whenever you change the way that you distribute libraries, because with the big.NET framework, where there is one canonical copy of, you know, system.foo.dll sitting on your system, if there is a security problem in system.foo.dll, we just patch that one copy. If we end up with a security problem in a NuGet library, how do we patch every copy? Well, Microsoft does have a way to service NuGet libraries, and we will service in the event of a security issue. But we are trying to limit the servicing that we do to very important servicing. We won't service just for functionality changes, we'll instead increment the versions. Current Scala support from Nick. Current Scala support in .NET. There is probably a Scala compiler out there. I don't write Scala myself, but you're welcome to write one. Alex, what has happened with WCF? It doesn't seem there's any development in WCF. WCF is actually produced by the same team that produces ASP.NET, and they've been focusing on ASP.NET vNext, which is why it came into .NET Native late. But I can tell you WCF is still very much alive. We're bringing in support to .NET Native with it right now. We would like to see some .NET support on the Xbox One. Andrea, so would I. Support is coming for .NET on the Xbox One. And then Jerry is asking about patterns and practices making a big investment for software factories. WSSF, not available in VS 2013. I can't see the rest of that question right now, but I will tell you this is a question that's a bit out of my reach. Please do make a comment on the .NET blog, and someone will get back to you on this in more detail, routed to the right people. And Blake, what about .NET Micro Framework? Keep your eye on the IoT team. .NET Micro Framework is key to our investment in IoT these years. So back to the slides for a minute. .NET Native, Project N. So this is, I've talked a little bit about this already. This is our next generation compiler in the cloud. It builds upon this Triton story where we did half of the NGen compilation in the cloud and then the easy part on the user's device. Apps compiled with .NET Native start up to 60% faster. We're seeing about 30-40% on average, and they use about 25% less memory. The previews are available right now. Our third preview, I think, comes out next week. So you should definitely pick that up. If you want the latest bits, wait until next week, pick it up. Here's some startup numbers for Wordament. I don't know if you know Wordament. It is a highly addictive game. If you don't use it, don't start. You'll never get off of it. It's incredibly fun. With Wordament, we were seeing about a 40% cold startup. That's the first time that you run the app. 40% cold startup improvement, a 30% warm startup improvement in case you've run the app or a managed app recently, and a 12.5-13% memory usage decrease. So it's not just this is really what we wanted for store applications. When you run a store application, you want it to start quickly, you want it to be responsive, and you want the low memory usage. One, because you want to be able to run more apps concurrently without having them put to sleep with the process lifecycle management that is inside of Windows, and I won't get into. But also, when you're using memory, you're burning battery. So with mobile devices, you want to make sure that you do less work, that you're more performant, you're doing less work, you're burning less battery, and that you're using less memory, you're burning less battery. When you do pick up .NET Native from the download page that I just had on the last slide, you can see that the Visual Studio experience is extremely straightforward. You enable .NET Native for your project, you debug it, and you test it. That's about it. So it's extremely easy to use. .NET Native should just work. Where it does not, talk to us. As I said, we're trying to release things early. We're trying to release things at a state where we can get feedback from you. So we really want to hear from you about .NET Native. In fact, we have an email address, .NET Native at Microsoft.com. We encourage you to send any feedback on .NET Native to that. AV asks some more questions. Whether there will be a need for an obfuscator on .NET vNext MVC? That's a great question for tomorrow. Sorry I can't answer it. One interesting thing about .NET obfuscators, with .NET Native, you do not need to use an obfuscator because our code generation for .NET Native is done by the C++ optimizer. I've got a talk coming up later today where I'm going to be diving deep into the .NET Native toolchain. You will see that it is the C++ optimizer producing our code, so there's really no need for a .NET obfuscator on .NET Native apps. With regards to ASP.NET vNext, tomorrow is the time to ask that when the ASP.NET folks are here. When I use the term universal Windows apps, do I mean platforms running Windows or actual cross-platform support? From Jamal. So for universal Windows apps, once again, this is Microsoft releasing early, being open, wanting to have a conversation with people. We started universal Windows apps with Windows Phone and Windows 8.1. We're not going to stop there. We definitely have some other Microsoft platforms we have to attack. We have to make sure that you can target universal apps to these platforms. But I would love to see the word Windows drop from universal apps and just make it universal apps out of Visual Studio. I know that there's a lot of people who would love to see universal apps running across platforms as well. Greg, what can be done to improve the security trustability of non-curated NuGet feed? That's another great question for the blog. Our ecosystem can talk about that. I do know that the curated feed is the one that we will do security patches for and the one that we will support. Nuno Cruz, will .NET support other platforms like Linux, iOS besides Microsoft products? So Mono has been around for a long, long time, and the Xamarin company produces tools that allow you to use C# and use .NET and use our .NET libraries and their implementations of our .NET libraries to target iOS, Android. We love Xamarin, and we do everything we can to make them successful. Keith asks, could strong naming be modified to ease the exact version match restrictions, perhaps optionally, and perhaps follow semantic version rules? This is a deeper discussion. Comment to our blog. We'd love to have a discussion about this. So go to the .NET blog, leave us a comment. We'll get the right people on it. What projects will .NET Native be available? Currently, it is Windows Store. We're going to improve this. What about Xamarin? Microsoft decided to buy it and release Xamarin on Visual Studio. I will not be the guy buying Xamarin if Microsoft buys it. Sorry, Sam, I can't speak to whether or not we will buy it. I've only heard about 16 rumors about us buying Xamarin. I know nothing about that. You could comment on our blog and ask someone to buy it. Golden Joe, will .NET 4.5.2 be supported on Windows Phone? .NET 4.5.2 is the big box .NET framework, and this installs is our Windows SKU, Windows client SKU of the .NET framework. So when you ask if .NET 4.5.2 will be supported on Windows Phone, the version of .NET on Windows Phone goes hand in hand with the version of .NET on Windows, and so these improvements, anytime we make improvements on .NET 4.5.2, we share source with the Windows Phone .NET, which is core CLR based and is a slightly different framework. So these improvements make their way in. And another question, what will be the version of the .NET framework vNext? .NET 5? Sounds good. Or .NET 4.5.3 or .NET 4.5.6? I don't know. Version numbers are not up to me. When are we planning on publishing it? Fall 2014 or winter 2015? Again, we're trying to publish these things as quickly as possible. We have a quick cadence. We released one in October, released one in May, but I can't speak to the next release date. Now I'm going to go back and talk about JIT for a moment. As I mentioned, we've got this .NET Native, which is our optimistic static compiler, doing your code generation early. We are also investing in our just-in-time compilation, which is our lazy compile when you run the application. So if you look at a compiler's performance, there are two important things here. You have the throughput measures how fast a compiler generates app code. And because you are, when you're running an app using a JIT compiler, the JIT compiler can really dominate the app startup time because you have to compile any code before you execute it. And then the code quality measures how fast the generated code itself runs. So code quality matters a ton in long-running processes. It doesn't matter so much for, say, store apps where they're usually lightweight, single purpose. you compile your code on startup, and then the app doesn't do much. It's spending most of its time talking with cloud processes, et cetera, or running a few functions that have already been compiled. So we have three JIT code bases now in Microsoft, or on the .NET team. We have our JIT32 for our client machines, and we have our JIT64 for our server machines. The JIT32 emphasizes throughput, how fast code is generated, over code quality. The idea is that on an x86-based machine, you're going to have a bunch of user applications, and you really want your apps to start quickly. The 64-bit JIT emphasizes code quality over throughput. The idea here is that 64-bit machines will never, ever, ever be used as day-to-day workstations. They will only forever be server machines. Server applications run for a really, really, really long time, and thus we are concerned about doing the best compilation no matter how long it takes. Well, we were wrong about that. It turns out that people are running 64-bit machines as their primary desktops, and so emphasizing the code quality over throughput wasn't really the right choice. So what were we going to do? Were we going to go ahead and emphasize throughput over code quality? We were not. We created RyuJIT. RyuJIT is a new modern JIT platform. We actually built it from the 32-bit JIT code base such that we could get the throughput characteristics from we could get the throughput characteristics of our x86 JIT, our 32-bit JIT, so that apps start quickly. But we didn't want to give up on the performance because we have a ton of enterprises out there who rely on the performance that they get from our 64-bit JIT. With RyuJIT, I'm happy to say the blue lines up are good. We are getting fantastic performance as compared to our JIT64, our existing 64-bit JIT. There are some places we are not doing quite as well. RyuJIT is still in CTPs. We are looking to make every single one of those lines be above the line. As I mentioned, RyuJIT is based on JIT32 for fast throughput. Brings the optimizations of JIT64 over for great code quality. We started with x64 as our first target for RyuJIT because it was where the largest need was. We will be bringing RyuJIT to all of our platforms. Having one JIT code base means that we can also afford to innovate in our JIT code base. Instead of supporting a feature in three and fixing bugs in three code bases, we can now do it once and it comes to everything. We have SIMD, for example, came out with RyuJIT CTP3, single instruction, multiple data. It's on Wikipedia. It's great. Awesome performance improvement. It allows you to do four things at once or eight things at once inside of the processor. More features are coming, including x86 support, ARM support, and here is a link where you can get CTP3. Here are some questions on compilation. Ross is asking about compile in the cloud, use Nginish features of .NET Native without using the cloud, or do we have to go through the store? So compile in the cloud is the term that we use to refer to our Triton, the Windows Phone compiler. The idea being that we did most of the hard optimization in the cloud and then the easy parts on the user's phone. .NET Native, one characteristic of it is that all the libraries are distributed with the application, so we can actually do all of the compilation in the store. And with .NET Native, you will be doing your compilation in the cloud for Windows Store apps. When .NET Native moves off of Windows Store apps to address other scenarios, then the deployment model changes, and the decision to do the compilation in the cloud is more of a deployment model question. What's appropriate for the store, not what's appropriate for .NET Native. Edward, will .NET Native mean faster apps compared to RyuJIT, or do the speed improvements you get with RyuJIT versus the old JIT actually mean there's not much difference between the two? We want them all to be fantastic. The .NET Native is using the developer division's world-class C++ optimizer to get fast applications. RyuJIT is using our world-class JIT optimizer to get fast. There are different things that you can do with static compilation and with dynamic compilation. We're trying to make all of our apps perform quickly, but currently .NET Native apps and RyuJIT apps are compiled, and apps that are compiled with RyuJIT, these are completely different code generators. They do share a lot of ideas. Much of our JIT team came from the C++ optimizer team. We are close friends with C++. We like them, they like us. We share ideas, concepts, feedback. Mane asking about, what about C Sharp 6.0? Lucky for you, the next talk is about the future of C Sharp. C Sharp 6.0 is likely the future of C#. That's my bet. We would love to hear from you. Questions now. I've got a few minutes left if we have more questions. I have talked, I think, as much as I can about the Microsoft.net blog. We try to blog on topics that are interesting to you. Definitely appreciate your suggestions, your comments, your questions, your complaints, you name it. Good cookie recipes if you happen to have any. Email. My email was on the first slide. It is andrew.pardo@microsoft.com. You can also, for .NET Native in particular, send mail to .NET Native@microsoft.com. We have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter thing, NSDM forums, and of course, user voice. I pulled up a couple of user voice screen caps in my presentation just to highlight that really, .NET, if anything right now, we are feedback driven. We really want to make sure that what we are doing is what is important to you. So go to user voice, vote up the things that you see as important, download the previews for .NET Native, ASP.NET vNext, ReuGIT, try these things out. If you've got an application that turns out to be a fantastic test case for us, a performance case, you could actually end up being the app that we optimize for. So talk to us and let us know what you want. There are no more questions in the queue. I'd left a few minutes for questions at the end. And so I will wrap it up. And I will see you again in a few hours to talk more about .NET Native in depth. Right now, you can hear about the future of C# with Mads. Thank you.